Good morning, I'm Kathleen Dunn. It is Monday, the 5th of November, the day before the big election in this country.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
I resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Government is not the solution to our problem.
Constitute an axis of evil.
I just don't want to see us fall backwards.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
If you're tired of being tired, then I ask you to vote for real change.
We'll have three guests with us the first hour of the program. In the second hour of our show this day before election, we'll talk with Wisconsin public radio reporters about all of the visits from all the presidential candidates and surrogates, particularly over the last week. Three guests with us. We start with Stephen Thoma. He is senior White House correspondent and the government and politics editor for McClatchy Newspapers, oversees coverage of the White House, Congress, and economics. He has covered Washington for a good long time, since 1987. Later this hour, we'll speak with a Republican strategist who was the former national campaign manager for Governor Mike Huckabee's presidential campaign. And later still, Ari Berman, contributing writer for The Nation, author of Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. I'm sure we'll have many phone calls during the course of the hour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, if you would like to leave a day before the election message on our Facebook page. Stephen Thoma, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning. It's my pleasure.
Oh, don't you sound chipper, and I'm sure you haven't had much sleep either. You know, I must start with, how in the world does everybody do this, particularly these candidates? I just can't imagine the toll on the body.
I think it's a lot of chocolate, caffeine, coffee, tea, and more chocolate.
I guess. And you
in all reality, I mean, first of all, they are remarkable days, the last week. I mean, a lot of 20-hour days, not only for the candidate, but the staff, the press, the cameramen who are lugging around that heavy equipment. They're long days, but adrenaline really kicks in. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure that it is. So from your perspective, who has a good, maybe both candidates have equally as good get-out-the-vote efforts, the on-the-ground game for tomorrow?
I mean, the Obama campaign has a better ground operation, by all accounts. I mean, in terms, if we measure it by how many offices they have in each state and how many people they have to go out from each of those offices with lists of doors and addresses and names, people they're going to actually knock on the doors, find out if they're voting. So I'll take Ohio as an example. They have about 130 offices, and it's about three times as many as the Romney campaign.
Mm-hmm. And will that be important? Is that a crucial thing to look at tomorrow, Steve?
It is a major factor in terms of, as I said, you identify, the last thing you do, you send these people out and knock on the doors, is get a hard count of who at each house is actually going to vote for you. So if someone says, yes, I'm going to vote for Obama, then you're going to go back and knock on the door or call again and remind them to vote, and you're going to check the polling places and find out if they have voted. If they say they're definitely voted for the other guy, you know, leave them alone. You know, never knock on that door again. Make sure they don't vote. I'm sorry, you don't make sure they don't vote, but you don't remind them to vote.
Right.
So in a close race, yeah, get out the vote is important. Having said that, the campaign's not the only ones doing this. I mean, both there are a lot of other efforts, and particularly for the Democrats, there are the unions, the service employees, the firefighters have a terrific on-the-ground operation in every precinct in every county of the country. The Republicans used to have, under the Bush administration, they had the called the 72-hour project that Karl Rove put together. That has atrophied a little bit. They don't have as much of that.
Well, let's talk about Ohio for a moment here. Is it indeed the path to the victory?
It certainly remains the most obvious keystone. I say that a little pun intended, because now the Romney campaign hopes the keystone state of Pennsylvania will be the final path. But there are several paths to victory. I mean, there are so many close states. There are about 10 or 11 that you could actually call a toss-up, more than usual. So you can add up the numbers in multiple different ways. But most of those scenarios end up with Ohio.
Mm-hmm. So tomorrow night, if we're looking at returns and we get to Ohio, let me give you two scenarios and what they would say. One is that Ohio appears to be a victory for one candidate or the other. The second is Ohio is too close to call.
I think it's more likely that we, certainly tomorrow evening, will have Ohio too close to call. I'd be surprised if they call it tomorrow evening. Early Wednesday morning. I'm very prepared to be at work till 6 in the morning on Wednesday.
Are you really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is not unusual, of course. 2008 was unusual. And we just had 2000 and 2004 were both ones that went into overtime. Every sign suggests we could do that again.
Right. What about problems that we're hearing? They're just surfacing reports today and last night of very long lines in Florida, some problems in Ohio. Are you reporting on that today? Are there some early voting problems?
Yes. Yes. We have, well, first of all, we own the Miami Herald, so we're very much on top of the debacle in Miami-Dade yesterday, where they have cut back by legislative act, cut back early voting. Then a local office decided to open for early voting. Then the mayor said, no, close it. Then they reopened. And it was a debacle. But even before that, yesterday, on Saturday and Friday, there were lines of 3 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's the early vote. That's not the day when everyone is showing up at the same time. I'm not sure if that means turnout will be up overall for this election, or it just means turnout is shifting to Friday instead of the final Tuesday. In Ohio, again, Ohio seems to have it in its DNA right now to have some problems, too, much like Florida. We'll have a reporter in Ohio. He arrives this afternoon. Paying a lot of attention, particularly to Cuyahoga County, Cleveland. They've had some problems in the past with long lines, with polling places being closed before everyone votes. That's the big thing to watch tomorrow night.
Well, what is the problem with these long lines? Don't they have enough workers? Why can't you get enough people there so you don't have to wait in line so long?
Well, I mean, you can't predict that if everyone's going to show up at the same time. I mean, I don't think you can staff for 8,000 people showing up. I vote in Virginia. We don't have early voting. Everyone will vote on Tuesday. And yet I've never waited in line more than 15 minutes, even in high turnout elections like 2008. I'm not sure why. I guess they do have smaller staffs or fewer polling places.
Well, let's go to phone calls. I'm sure a lot of people want to talk today. Our guest, the first part of the All Things Political for this day before the election, is Stephen Thoma. He is senior White House correspondent and the government and politics editor for McClatchy Newspapers. We start our calls. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. Marty in Douglas County. Hi, Marty.
Well, hello. Hey, we made it this far. Congratulations, everybody. On this election eve, though, I really would like to encourage people who missed Frontline's profile of the two candidates to watch it tonight on PBS. I found it particularly interesting to hear what the Mormon scholars had to say about Mormonism and Romney in particular. He really must be breathing a sigh of relief right now that his religion, on which he really seems to rely so strongly to guide his decisions, barely got a second's worth of attention during the campaign. One of the experts on the program said something that just sent a chill down my spine. I wish I could remember the terminology she used. It was something like covenants. Mormons are striving to bring the kingdom of God to the U.S., and she wondered if becoming president, Romney felt he could advance the fulfillment of that covenant, and I just found that terribly disturbing.
Well, let's take the part of this that Mormonism really has not been discussed very much during this campaign. Steve, why?
Well, I first of all, I'll take it as a great testament to our country that it has not been discussed. And there haven't been a lot of fears or fear-mongering about his religion. I have to admit, it came up more in the Republican primaries. Certainly, going out and talking to voters, it was more an issue to a small percentage of evangelical Christians who were voting in Iowa and New Hampshire and some of those, and South Carolina, in some of those early voting states, and they were inclined not to vote for Romney, but for one of the other Republicans. I have not heard it brought up by more than one or two voters in the general election as I've traveled the country. And I think it's a great thing that it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. I have seen that Frontline special, and it's pretty fair, even-handed treatment of both candidates, I think. Pretty well done. Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I wanted to talk about Romney's current stump speech where he keeps focusing on change, and he knows how to bring real change. When and they tout his Olympic, you know, experience with turning around the Olympics. What he did in that case was he facilitated federal money to help bail out the Olympics. So, and 70% of his people are people who have worked formerly in the Bush administration, especially in his foreign policy. So I don't see how they can possibly claim that going back to the Bush era policies of, you know, tax breaks for the wealthy, trickle-down economics, all those sort of things, where is the change in all that? Those are just repeats of past Republican policies that have proven themselves to hurt the middle class, falling incomes for the last 30 years, on and on. And then they want to talk about our children's future and at the same time eliminating protection of water, air, no discussion of climate change, maybe one of the most important issues of our time.
All right. Stephen, do you see a clear difference, and has this been really the strategy of both campaigns to concentrate on the economy and give us very different paths for the future?
Well, there's no doubt they're focused on the economy because that's what the country's focused on. There have been occasional moves during the last 6 weeks to focus on something else, social issues, the brief talk about foreign policy during the foreign policy debate. There has been an undercurrent of talk about Libya, but no, the economy is the dominant issue. It's interesting the caller talked about that Mitt Romney says he'd change, but he wouldn't change. He would go back. But surely he would go back, to, particularly to the Bush tax policy. But that is a change, I mean, because President Obama has a different tax policy.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Willem, for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. The caller mentioned climate change. I would imagine in the future we will have more conversation about that. But I must ask you about the hurricane. What about plans for all those people who will have a hard time voting because perhaps their election place no longer exists? What plans are being made for those people, and the impact, of course, of the storm on this whole election?
Well, I'll take those in two parts. The impact of the storm on the election, I think, and it's my analysis, it definitely helped President Obama for two reasons. One, it stopped the campaign for three full days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of last week. The president suspended campaigning, went back to the White House. Mitt Romney was pretty much stuck. Very little he can do. So it stuck it at a point where President Obama was looking good, too. And the second part is he looked bipartisan. He was bipartisan. He was reaching out and working with Governor Christie and Republican mayors and basically doing his day job. And that made him look good. So I think it helped him. I think it helped him a lot. I do think, and we've written, there was also some effort by the White House and the Obama campaign. They were very aware that this was a moment, unscripted, unplanned for, obviously not deliberate, but a moment of opportunity where they could play to their strengths, which is to look good, look competent, look bipartisan, and stress one of the most popular things about government, which is when it works in times of crisis to help people. As an example, it was very noticeable how often the White House will use their campaign slogan in official briefings and documents or statements about the storm. We hadn't heard the president ever say that he was going to lean forward in governing, but now forward was used in every briefing. But overall, it definitely helped them. The second part is how it affects voting. They're bringing in tents to set up alternate polling places next to places that aren't working or are flooded or without power. They're going to have extra generators. But they, by the very definition of moving polling places, always is a disturbance to voting. Sometimes it's done deliberately to screw around with the vote, and it could mean that these two states, particularly New Jersey, but also maybe the parts of New York, may take days to count the ballots. And it's not really a factor because we know they're almost certain to vote Democratic. I can't imagine a scenario where we're waiting late on Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday, waiting to find out which way New Jersey went. If there was any chance that state might swing, that would definitely make a difference, but I don't think it does.
Steve, have a good ride. No sleep tonight for you. Thank you so much for being with us. Stephen Thoma, our guest, the first part of this hour, senior White House correspondent and the government and politics editor for McClatchy Newspapers, the first of three guests. We'll meet the second in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Chip Saltzman is our next guest on All Things Political for this Monday, the 5th of November. He's a Republican strategist and is the former national campaign manager for Governor Mike Huckabee's presidential campaign. I remember 4 years ago we were in Dubuque, Iowa, for the primary there, and we spoke with Chip at that moment when he was working with Mike Huckabee, who ran a strong campaign in Iowa and a strong campaign nationally. So it's fun to have him back on the air 4 years later. 4 years later. Isn't that something, Chip? Here we are. Here we are again.
Here we are again, right before an election.
Right before an election. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, ma'am.
And in terms of turnout on this election, what do you think is going to happen? 4 years ago, it was a historic election, of course, in this country. Do you imagine that there will be the same kind of enthusiasm for Obama and the same enthusiasm on Republican side for a change from Obama?
Well, you know, it's a lot harder for an incumbent 4 years later to have the same kind of enthusiasm. The most popular Obama probably was the day he was inaugurated. Then he had to start making decisions and started making people mad. So it's tough to get that enthusiasm level that he had 4 years ago. And I think that's kind of what we've seen in some of the polling. I know I try not to question a lot of different polls, but, you know, I just don't think there's that kind of enthusiasm for Barack Obama that there was 4 years ago. And we're seeing that as you look at the early voting across the state. Most of them are down just a little bit from the 2008 campaign. You can even go to Ohio, where Democrats are down about 150,000 in the early voting and absentee ballots. Republicans are up about 100,000. That's a difference of about 250,000 votes. And amazingly, Barack Obama won Ohio by about 253,000 votes 4 years ago. So he's got, you know, that's going to be a little bit of a challenge, but I think the enthusiasm and the momentum is with the Republicans, and what we're going to find out tomorrow is it enough to overtake the president?
Chip, tell us honestly, what are you going to be watching tomorrow? What states will be coming in, or even precincts or counties coming in that will be an indication that Governor Romney is doing well tomorrow night?
Well, I mean, obviously, earlier as we look at the West Coast, we definitely have to put Virginia in the column pretty early. And we're going to find out pretty soon if Florida, Virginia, and North Carolina, which I think most people will tell you North Carolina's in the Romney column for sure, one of the earlier swing states that they could take off the map. If we win those three states, and obviously it moves to the next time zone when Ohio closes. And if Ohio doesn't go our way, then we've got to depend on Wisconsin or in Colorado and Iowa. And then it could be for a very long night after that. So the early states, especially the East Coast that close earlier, they're definitely going to have to look at Florida, Virginia, and North Carolina to make sure those are in the Romney column as he looks for his path to 270.
Why is Governor Romney in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think for a couple reasons. The polls have certainly shown that race has been very tight. Pennsylvania is not a state that we've typically done well the last couple election cycles. Obama certainly won that state by a very comfortable margin in 08. But there's also a very competitive United States Senate race there where the Republican has really outspent the Democrat candidate, really made it close. The turnout in the rural parts of Pennsylvania, they feel like are going to be up from 4 years ago. And they think they've got a chance there. I mean, are they depending on Pennsylvania to win the White House? No. But it's certainly one of those states that we found early. If it's close, then we know we're going to be for a long night tomorrow night.
And what states are the Republicans looking at to make sure they win to win the White House?
Well, again, if it's Ohio is the center of the world. And if Republicans can win Ohio, then they don't need many more states to get there. And we've always said, you know, there hadn't been a Republican win the White House in Ohio in a very long time. So that certainly makes the path to 270 a lot easier. If it's not Ohio, then Governor Romney needs Wisconsin, Colorado, and Iowa, something like that to make up the difference. If he's got Ohio, then he can depend on if he gets Ohio, then he can depend on, like, perhaps Colorado and Iowa to get him over the 270.
What do you think about this early voting? We've heard reports from Florida, as you know, and some from Ohio, but most news reports on Florida, that people were waiting in line until and didn't get to vote till 1 in the morning last night, or this morning, actually.
It truly is amazing. You know, we always talk about
especially through the process. You know, who's got the enthusiasm, who's got the momentum, and right now it's all. I find it very exciting that people that are waiting in lines till 1 o'clock in the morning to vote. I mean, they take this election very seriously, and certainly. My friends on the Democrat side, I always say, look, I think everybody should vote. The more people to vote, the better it is for this country. And I think we're in for a pretty high turnout election overall, and especially some of these states that are very, very close. Everybody knows, and what we learned from the 2000 campaign, every vote matters.
But don't you think there's a problem with people having to wait in line to vote at 1 in the morning?
Well, I mean, obviously that's something the counties need to work on and see if they – I'm sure they did not expect that many people to come. I mean, really, the county election commissions and the coordinators, I mean, they try to have the election machines where they feel like most of the voters are, so you don't have hours upon hours to wait. And I think one of the reasons that we started early voting was so we can have the convenience of voting a few weeks early, no question. But it's also that you don't have to wait 2 or 3 hours to wait in line to vote because people have busy lives and perhaps they don't have time to wait 3 hours to go vote. So it is shocking that there are people waiting in line till 1 o'clock in the morning, and hopefully the local counties can fix that. But I find it somewhat exciting that people are that committed and passionate enough to wait in line till 1 o'clock in the morning.
We're going to welcome phone calls. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's All Things Political, which you always hear on Monday mornings at 9 o'clock. And today it's one of the more important ones, the day before the election. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And our email is talk@WPR.org. Here's an email that's come in. Let's go to that and then to some phone calls. Pat writes, aren't there only a few early voting polling places, so long lines are not surprising? On Election Day, there are many more places to vote.
Well, it's every state's different, and every county in the state has got to make their own decisions. In some of the smaller counties, perhaps, the county seat where the municipalities of the government, they may have a voting location for the whole county. For instance, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, Davidson County, the capital city. We have several early voting locations all throughout the city. I think we have 8 total. And I can tell you, when I went to go vote early, there was a line, but I got through it in about 15 minutes. And so, again, the larger counties try to have multiple satellite locations. The smaller counties tend to have just one in perhaps the courthouse or something like that over the election commission. And they try to say, okay, we know what the history is. Maybe we only need 5 voting machines for this county or this location. And then what happens is you see the intensity and the passion, and they have a lot more voter turnout than they're expecting. So it is a bit of a challenge for our local election administrators to figure out how many and where to put them.
Let's go to phone calls. Dave in Eau Claire, hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First thing I wanted to do was just respond to the comments earlier by your lady that was anti-Mormon in nature. I've done business with Mormons for probably 20 years, and I'm not Mormon myself, but they're some of the best, most frugal business people I ever met. I say more power to it. We need a good, strong Mormon with good, frugal beliefs in the White House. And secondly, I think that in Ohio and Pennsylvania, another place I do a fair amount of business and travel to frequently, the whole energy issue will be huge because of the fracking and natural gas. I think that's going to be going strongly against President Obama in that regard. In Wisconsin, we should feel that way too about agriculture, because I think President Obama will drive cap and trade through presidential mandate, and the USDA says that'll shut down 59 million acres, which means it'll just transfer that food production overseas to places where it's less regulated, and we'll lose jobs here in America. So I think these energy issues, these cap and trade issues, are important issues in the rural areas that will help decide the election in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Wisconsin.
Thanks for the call. You didn't hear the first conversation, but somebody called with concern about Romney's Mormonism, and we were talking about the fact that it really hasn't come up, religion has not come up very much in this election at all. Is that a good thing?
Yeah, I think that is a good thing, and we shouldn't be talking about that kind of stuff. It should be talking about the future of the issues, like energy and some of the issues that we know that are going to matter when you're paying $4 and $5 a gallon gas. Energy is a pretty big issue. And look, there's always going to be a small portion of the population that religion or, you know, somebody's race plays into it. And I hope, as the majority of our country is past that, I mean, we've got an African-American president and we've got a Republican nominee who's a Mormon. And like you said, that has not been any major issue in the campaign, and that's really how it should be.
And yet we may see in the vote, I'm wondering if we have heard that maybe evangelical Christians are not as excited about voting for Romney, and that African Americans and Latinos are more excited about voting for Obama. So we've got this divide perhaps still based on religion and race. What do you think?
I worked for obviously a very evangelical Christian 4 years ago and competed against Mitt Romney, and it was a very intense campaign. But you look 4 years later, Governor Huckabee has been an enthusiastic supporter of Governor Romney's campaign. Religion is not the issue. You want to know if they're a good person. You want to know if they, you know, how their family life is. You know, and how, what are they going to do for this country? And I think that's really where we are as a country. I mean, I think if you say, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, that was a much bigger deal. But I think most people in this country has moved beyond that, which I think is a very good thing. You know, as far as, you know, African-Americans voting for Barack Obama or Latinos, I don't, you know, look, obviously race is an issue, but it shouldn't be. And when I think about how we go after the Latino vote in this country, it shouldn't be about race. It should be about hope and opportunity. It should be about jobs. It should be about energy. Because I don't think a Latino family looks at their economics any different than I do. We want to have a good job. We want our kids to go to a good school. We want them to have more opportunities than we did. That's not a Latino issue. That's not an African-American issue. That's just an American issue. And I think that's how it should be.
All indications, though, as you well know, are that Latino vote will go very heavily for the Democrats this cycle. Do the Republicans need to look at that, because the future of the country is more minority?
There's no question. And when I think it's going to be probably about a 70% turnout for the president in the Latino community, I think President Bush got about 40-something percent of that vote. We need to attack that vote just like we do anything else. But I think the key to that is to do it through the economic issues. And I think if everybody wants to have a better job, like I said, a better education for their kids, an opportunity to do better than the last generation. And I think as a party, that's what we're going to have to look at after this election, win, lose, or draw.
Let's go to some more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, 60 seconds of potpourri. I hope that people will pick at the GOP offices with signs saying no GOP fraud, which will hopefully pre-exempt some of their electronic vote manipulations and also inhibiting people from voting. Secondly, a tongue-in-cheek observation. Romney has made the decision on who he's going to have to head up job creation, and the person that he selected is Jack Diddley. And Jack Diddley is a very useful name because it also describes the extent of the Republican efforts to create jobs before the election.
Are you worried about electronic vote manipulation, Chip?
It's obviously we want to have a fair election all throughout the country. And I think we all have poll watchers on both sides to make sure everything runs as smoothly as possible. I was in Florida after the 2000 campaign looking at every hanging chad that you could possibly look out in Broward County. And I think at the end of the day, we've got to make sure that our election commissions around the country have all the resources they need to make sure that we have a fair election.
I got to tell you, a lot of people are concerned about the incredible amounts of money being spent on all levels this election go around. Does that concern you? It's almost as though there's money to waste, and so you keep running an extra ad and an extra ad. I can't believe people are watching them anymore.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think I saw a number yesterday where $160 million has been spent in the state of Ohio alone.
Wow.
And that is absolutely unbelievable. We're talking about billion-dollar campaigns. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, the Mike Huckabee campaign from start to finish spent $16 million total. Now, obviously, we didn't win the primary, so we didn't go on to the general. Go back 4 years ago, remember, John McCain took federal matching money and had about $85 million to spend from the nomination until the general election. So he had to make some choices about which states he could play in. Now both campaigns have hundreds of millions of dollars to spend in the same amount of time, and so they inundate with TV ads and mail, and it really has gotten to be, you know, one of the few times I felt lucky that I'm not in a swing state because I could watch TV without seeing all the attack ads and commercials. nonstop. And it's just a, I don't know the solution because it's money and politics. I mean, we're talking about billion-dollar campaigns now. You've got super PACs that are unlimited. It's a fine line when you talk about controlling the money and then having free speech. But this is, I'm not going to say it's gotten completely out of control, but when you're spending $160 million in one state, that seems to be almost a little out of control.
Mm-hmm. Sam in Madison is next. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning to your guest. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name.
His name is Chip. Chip Saltzman.
Okay. Okay, thank you. There are two things I want to talk about, and the first is related to what you guys were just talking about, that is the influence of money. So, Kathleen, I'm very concerned, as a non-citizen living in the U.S., I'm very concerned about the independents and how they actually vote. The reason is this. I think that they make their decisions based on presidential debates and campaign ads. And I've seen it over the last 9 years, ever since I've been living in this country, that the content of the presidential debate and the campaign ads is more style than substance. For example, the very first debate that we had this year, I didn't think that Obama did that bad at all. I think Romney was very aggressive, very bully-like. He almost told the moderator to he's gonna take his funding away. But that swung the polls. You know, if you like Romney, that's great, but that debate shouldn't have swung the polls because in that debate there was nothing of substance that should have swung the polls. So I'm concerned about that. I think people need to look at substance as policies, not style. That's the first thing. Second question that I have is that, you know, in 2004, during the war, Iraq war, one of the arguments I heard, the reason Bush got reelected, was that we're in the midst of a war, we don't want to change leadership, it might complicate the war situation. Why doesn't the same attitude apply in the midst of an economic crisis that we are right now, where why don't they think, oh, we have a bad economy, let's not change leadership, let's keep what policies are in place and see how they play out?
All right, Chip.
Yeah. Very thoughtful and complex question. You've got some pretty good listeners over there.
We do.
You know, for the first part, I'll take the second question first, where he was talking about, you know, the change of the war versus an economic crisis. And I think one of the points that Governor Romney's been making is this has been an economic crisis, and he thinks some of the decisions the president's made has not made it that much better. And we think some of Governor Romney's policies can make our recovery faster, better, more robust, more aggressive, better jobs. And so I think it's a little bit different when you're talking about a war overseas versus an economic crisis at home, because economic policies are a whole lot different than perhaps war policies. As far as where most people get their information, he's right. I mean, a lot of people get their information from the TV ads. That's why they run $160 million in Ohio. That's why they run them nonstop. The debate was a game-changing opportunity that you get a chance of, because of all this money spent, those are really the three times we only see these two folks running for president side by side, and you kind of contrast them in person. But there is never, ever a substitute for an individual taking it upon themselves to educate themselves on the positions of each candidate, whether it's running for president or city council. And that is up to each individual as a citizen to do that, whether it's online or go to their websites or do their own independent researches or going to events and listen to these folks talk, or whether it's somebody running for Congress and going to a town hall and asking questions. Nothing can ever substitute for that. And I think the greatness of our country has always been the fact that our individuals and our citizens go out and make their decisions for themselves, who they're going to support based on what they believe. And for some people, it's about, you know, there's a lot of single-issue voters out there. But for most people, it's about who's going to be the best person for this country, not for next week, but for the next generation.
Chip, thank you so much. I hope you'll join us again before
ma'am.
4 years.
I hope so. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Chip.
Yes, ma'am.
Chip Saltzman, Republican strategist, former national campaign manager for Governor Mike Huckabee's presidential campaign. We last spoke with him in Iowa 4 years ago. We are going to continue. Ari Berman joining us momentarily, contributing writer for The Nation. He's concerned about election problems, voting problems in Ohio and probably Florida. We'll talk about that and more, and welcome more of your phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, and you are listening to The Day Before, the big election coverage of all things political here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, we will talk with Wisconsin Public Radio news reporters from all around the state about all the visits, including visits today, and the issues and where various counties and sections of the state are swinging and all of that coming up with several of our Wisconsin Public Radio news reporters. Ari Berman is joining us now, contributing writer for The Nation magazine, investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. He is the author of several books, including Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. We'll take phone calls for him, 800-486-8655. Ari Berman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me back, and greetings from somewhere between Cleveland and Columbus, where I'm currently driving, and we'll try not to crash while I talk to you.
Oh, no. You're driving at the same time. We'll be careful.
Time is tight, but I'm used to it at this point.
I'm sure, and I know that you're also concerned about voting, early voting in the state of Ohio. You've been writing about that in the last 24 hours. What are your concerns?
Well, I've been in Cleveland monitoring early voting, and the big concern has been long lines, not only in Cleveland, but throughout the state. And this has largely occurred because the Ohio Secretary of State, John Husted, who's a Republican, has limited early voting hours. He only allowed early voting on this one weekend before the election, and that was forced by a court. Otherwise, you had to vote during the week. During regular business hours. So the fact that there was no night or weekend voting prior to this weekend was a very big deal in Ohio and a big change from 2008 and led to longer lines and confusions at the polls.
And that worries you in terms of a victory tomorrow for the Democrats? Do you think that will make a difference in the election?
It worries me from a Democratic process standpoint of people just not being able to easily cast a ballot and making it harder, particularly for working people who don't have time to spend a 2 or 3 hours online to be able to cast the ballot. So that my main concern is from a Democrat, small D Democratic perspective. From the perspective of the Obama campaign, I think it was disconcerting that people had to wait in such long lines. I think they felt like their people did turn out. I looked at the numbers in Cleveland for early voting relative to 2008. Early voting numbers were pretty steady relative to 2008. They dropped because of Sandy.
Mm.
Cleveland got hit really bad. There was blackouts throughout the city. And early voting in 2012 was actually ahead of 2008 levels in Cuyahoga County, Ohio, which is where Cleveland is, before Sandy hit. It's been down subsequently. I think the thinking is that some people who would have voted early are now going to vote on Election Day. Hopefully all the power will be back up and running then. But certainly not only voter suppression tactics, but the hurricane itself has really made voting more difficult in the northeast portion of the state.
And I'm sure you've seen the news reports, Ari, out of Florida. Those lines have been so long, and people were voting at 1 in the morning last night.
Well, and this is another consequence of Republicans shortening early voting hours. Florida shortened early voting from 14 days to 8 days and banned it on the Sunday before the election when black churches do their souls to the polls rally. And what we saw in Florida is very, very long lines. There's no way that there should only be 8 days of voting in a state as important as Florida. There should be at least 2 or 3 full weeks of early voting in a state like that. And if you looked at where those lines were in heavily minority areas, places like Miami-Dade County that not only have a history of election problems, but also tend to vote Democratic. So I believe this is an effort by Republican office holders to try to limit minority turnout that would benefit a Democratic candidate.
Why do we talk about all of this the day before an election? Why haven't there been more legal challenges, some way to make sure that the lines aren't that long before we come up to the election?
Well, there have been a lot of legal challenges. There was major legal challenges in Ohio to get voting on these 3 days before the election. The Obama campaign succeeded in challenging the Secretary of State's limits of voting hours here. In Florida, voting was restored in 5 counties that were subject to the Voting Rights Act. I think the problem is that election administrators have a lot of leeway, and in states that are not covered by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, and Section 5 that's for all of 16 states that have to get approval from the federal government for their voting changes. But in Florida, most of the states not subject to Section 5. Ohio's not subject to Section 5. Pennsylvania is not subject to Section 5. Wisconsin is not subject to Section 5. So you have a lot of swing states that aren't subject to Section 5. And the fights have been in state courts but state courts only have limited jurisdiction to deal with things like early voting. So there's been a lot of legal challenges, but that said, a lot of new voting restrictions have still been able to go through.
Ari Berman, our guest, we have a full bank of phones, so let's go to them, 800-486-8655. Marty in Elmira. Hi, Marty.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And another point came to mind, so hopefully there's enough time to spew forth this. To those that say that President Obama isn't creating jobs quick enough, what barometer are they basing that upon? I mean, he was handed darn near a depression. How do we base that on that jobs are being created too slowly and or too quickly? Secondly, I recently read an article that, in actuality, Santorum won Ohio, but the votes were flip-flopped between the candidates and thrown toward Romney in order to give him the victory. Any thoughts on that?
Did you hear that, Ari?
Yeah, I heard it. So it's such a distant memory to me at this point that I really don't remember what has happened there. In terms of the job numbers, I mean, this is a tangent to our conversation. My own feeling is that given the job and the serious depression that Obama inherited, the fact that unemployment is below 8% right now, the fact that job growth has been pretty good the last few months, better than expected. We've had upward revisions in the jobs numbers every month now for 4 or 5 straight months. It means that the economy, I think, is less of a liability for the president than a lot of people thought it was. I think it's one reason why this race is close. You look at states in the Midwest, for example, Obama's running strong in places like Ohio because of the auto bailout, because people, I think, believe he took the tough steps necessary to stabilize the economy. So it's not necessarily a winning issue for him, but I don't believe the economy is a losing issue for him like it perhaps was at the beginning of last year.
Can you tell me a little bit more, because you've probably seen these ads, the controversy about the Jeep moving to China ads that were run by the Romney campaign, and how?
Sure. So basically, the Romney campaign ran ads, I think, based on erroneous news reports that Chrysler, which makes Jeep and is now owned in part by an Italian company, was sending jobs to China, that Jeeps were going to be made in China. It turned out that that was not true, but basically what Romney said was two things. Number one, that Obama didn't save the auto industry, and number two, that he was shipping jobs to China, neither of which were really true. And you had the really unusual circumstance of the big car makers, Chrysler, GM, Ford, these are Republican-leaning companies basically saying to the Romney campaign, this isn't true. What you're saying about the president, what you're saying about jobs being sent overseas really isn't true. And so I think Romney has had a really hard time dealing with the fallout of the auto industry here. Everyone remembers the op-ed he wrote that said, let Detroit go bankrupt, in the New York Times. His position was more nuanced than that, but there's no doubt that when Romney spoke initially about the auto bailout, he did it at a time when Republicans were very opposed to the Wall Street bailout. And so he was trying to cater to anti-bailout sentiment. The auto bailout was not popular at the time, perhaps even in some of these important Midwest states. But the fact is, it was successful, and it has helped the president in states like Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
So should Obama win Ohio tomorrow night, it is that issue that would take him over the top, do you think, Ari?
Yeah. I think it's the auto bailout. I think it's been very targeted messaging in Ohio around the auto bailout. I think the Obama Super PAC Priorities USA has been effectively hammering Romney on Bain. You see these Bain ads all the time on the news in Ohio saying that Romney shut down plants and shipped jobs overseas. That's a very powerful message in a state with a long history of losing manufacturing jobs. And so I think the combination of Romney's background in Bain and then Obama's advocacy for the auto bailout and Romney's seeming opposition to the auto bailout could really hurt Romney here. And I think if Obama wins Ohio, that'll be why. And the fact that unemployment here is lower than the national average, which is also a very big deal.
And what's Romney's path to victory in Ohio?
Romney's path to victory would be twofold. Number one, that Obama doesn't get the turnout among minority voters and younger voters that he got in 2008, and that Romney would have very large margins in the Republican-leaning suburbs, that he would do very well, for example, around Cincinnati and Hamilton County, the larger swing counties in the state, that he would overperform among working-class white voters. One thing we're seeing is that the president is running strongly relative in other states among white working-class voters in Northeast Ohio. I think that's largely because of the auto bailout. I think he's losing some of those voters in other swing states that are trending Romney's way. And so I think Romney needs to win a decent portion of the white working class here, a larger portion than he might need elsewhere. And I think he also needs to do well with women in the suburbs. And we've seen the gender gap narrow when Romney's done better, and we've seen the gender gap reopen a little bit in these last-minute polls showing that Obama has a modest lead in Ohio and nationally.
Which begs another question. These things go one way and then they go the other in a matter of 5 days. I don't quite get it, but let's go to some phone calls. Marie in Oregon, Wisconsin. Hi, Marie.
Good morning. I have a question regarding the election system. Why can't the attorney generals of the states where there are paper trails guaranteed for recounts and 24/7 guarding of the ballots and watching the machines and so on by officials from both parties, why can't the attorney generals from those states do a class action suit based on our elections being potentially fraudulent with states who do not have a guaranteed paper trail for recounts and inspections of and random recounts? I think we need to tighten up on the random, lackadaisical attitude toward these elections. I thought that people also who interfered with elections, it used to be called treasonous activity, and they could be prosecuted. And the other thing is retired Justice Stevens has said, look, you have international interference with our elections here. I'm really upset over our election system.
Ari.
So I think the problem is that the attorney generals in different states, these are partisan offices. And so they have different agendas based on which parties they represent. I think this is a larger problem with our election process in general, is that why should the secretaries of state in these various states why aren't they nonpartisan positions? Every other country has their elections run by nonpartisan individuals. We have our elections run by very partisan individuals. For example, Ohio Secretary of State John Husted, he is an up-and-comer in the Republican Party. He is someone who has his eyes on higher office. He wants to deliver Ohio to Mitt Romney. And so I think there's a fundamental conflict when you have a Secretary of State who wants to deliver the state for a Republican candidate, and then you also have the fact that this is a crucial swing state where every vote needs to be counted. And I think that basic conflict, whether you're Republican or Democrat, is driving voter mistrust, whether it's Republicans who I think wrongly believe that there's going to be rampant voter fraud, or I think there's Democrats who believe that a lot of votes aren't going to be counted due to voter suppression law.
Ari, our first guest this hour said that we're not going to know the results of Ohio until 6 a.m. Wednesday morning. Do you agree?
I think we're not going to know the results of the election in Ohio possibly till November 17th.
Are you serious? And, why?
This is why, because provisional ballots in Ohio aren't counted until 10 days after the election by law. They're expecting 300,000 provisional ballots to be cast in Ohio. Obama only won the state by over 200,000 votes in 2008. So the number of provisional ballots should be higher than Obama's margin of victory. The majority of provisional ballots are cast in the largest counties of Ohio, which tend to lead Democratic. Provisional ballots are also cast by people who tend to be poorer or more progressive. And so these ballots tend to lean a Democratic. The Secretary of State in Ohio issued a last-minute directive, essentially shifting the onus from filling out the ballot from the poll worker to the voter. So if the voter makes a mistake filling out the provisional ballot, that ballot won't be counted. So we're looking at a situation where thousands of provisional ballots could be discarded. 40,000 ballots were discarded in 2008, provisional ballots. That number could rise this year. So if the election is close in Ohio, we're going to have to wait to open those provisional ballots until we know who won.
Oh, all I can say is,
pace yourself. Election day could be a lot longer than we think.
Thank you, Ari, so much for being with us. Ari,
thank you, Captain. I appreciate it.
Yeah, our pleasure. Ari Berman, contributing writer for The Nation magazine, investigative journalism fellow at The Nation, and author of Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. November 17th? Are you kidding me? No. No, tell me it ain't so. Well, thanks to Brett Jaspers from Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. And just a reminder of our election coverage this Tuesday. We will have extensive election coverage, 6 p.m., hour-long national call-in hosted by WNYC's Brian Lehrer, 7 o'clock NPR special hosted by Robert Siegel and Melissa Block with a lot of correspondents, 8 o'clock a full evening of election coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio News and NPR News, including coverage of state and national races. Hosted by WPR's Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg. So all that's coming up tomorrow. And we have another hour. Stay with us.